This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
With the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's Will Doctor.
This is the Charlotte. Here we go on a Saturday morning. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on Sports Map Radio Network and ESPN 97.5 Houston, presented by Insperity HR that makes a difference. Nice to have you aboard as we give you the latest as far as the world of golf is concerned. And Charlie, great to be with you this morning.
Likewise. It is a spring day in February in Houston. We're getting extra golf weather, so we're headed the right direction towards the Masters.
Incredible. I think just under 40 days, we have Arnold Palmer's event next week in Bay Hill. We have the Players the week after that. We're coming off a phenomenal West Coast swing, Charlie, that gave us such a great finish each and every week. Rahm at the American Express for Palm Springs, Max Homa at Torrey Pines, Justin Rose at Pebble Beach, and John Rahm again last week. What were your thoughts coming off the California swing there, Charlie?
Well, it was great golf. Different golf because of the Poana green. Some guys can putt those greens, some guys can't. The weather in L.A. was a little funny. I mean, it was cold, but yet I think one of the side stories of that is Tiger Woods not only showing up because he's the host, but he showed up as a player, and he did himself proud. Made the cut. You know, I think it kind of wore down on Sunday. Moving forward, gives us a lot of hope that he's going to participate a little more, but not a lot, as he said. So it was a great. I love Torrey Pines. I love Pebble Beach. But now we're on the East Coast, and different golf, Bermuda grass,
a lot of water,
and one of the most difficult golf courses. But they're shooting 62 on it, so it's not too bad. I mean, it's all dependent on the weather.
Yeah, the winds down in Palm Beach Gardens, where the Honda Classic is, highs of 84. Winds only blowing around 6 to 12 miles per hour, which is very low for that side of the country. Of course, you know, Tiger the last 2 weeks was just last week was electric. You know, I think just making the cut was a win for him. He looked, you know, great on Thursday and Saturday. And we'll see. He's not going to play Bay Hill next week, not going to play the Players. I guess, Charlie, the next time you can assume that we'll see him is at Augusta.
I was hoping he would play the Players. The Players is an easy walk. No up and down. You know, you get around that swamp pretty easily. Maybe he'll change his mind.
Yeah, he did say after the tournament that, you know, he was kind of struggling a little bit more with the leg more than he gave off. You know, he said he had to, you know, spend the night in ice baths and all that. So, you know, you can only hope that it gets stronger and stronger. We'll see. At 47, it's a tall task. Now, Charlie, as far as where we stand in this season, I mean, no one has had a faster start on the PGA Tour since, you know, that Rahm has had since Johnny Miller essentially swept the West Coast swing in 1975. Do you remember that run by Miller and you know?
Well, the one run I remember the one by Miller, the desert. You know, he just Tucson and Phoenix up.
Yeah.
But Lanny Watkins, 58 under par, L.A. and the Hope.
Wow. Yeah, in Palm Springs.
And he really butchered L.A. I mean, he played it like no other. And so I remember that a lot. The other thing I remember, he calls Dick Harmon and he wants some help. 57 under par and he wants some help. So he comes to Houston and Claude, Dick's famous father, the 48 Masters champion, he goes out. They're out at Lochinvar and Dick is, you know, he's kind of fidgeting and he's kind of deciding what he should do. And Claude, in his own little way, said, "Dick, the only thing you can teach Lanny is make sure he goes to the bank a different way every time."
Why do golfers do this, Charlie? You know, you play so well through two tournaments. You still see it today. You know, Lydia Ko, we're going to talk about some LPGA with Tim Schmidt. She won three times. Yeah. Last year, one player of the year fired Sean Foley after the season. Why do players do this?
You know, it's a lot of it's personal little quirks and stuff like that. I've been involved in that side of the business. Mm-hmm. You know, helping Blaine McAllister,
yeah,
and a few other guys, and of course Ankel. And you know, it's there's many different parts in that relationship. And sometimes the relationship goes south. It's, you know, look at divorce. Divorce is 50%, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't know.
I think it's over 60% for people that get married under 29. But I digress, yeah. Charlie. Yeah, a lot of splits between coaches and players, trainers and players, mental coaches and players. It's a, you know, these golfers, they have big teams out there now, Charlie.
They do. And, you know, you're at the epicenter of golf. You know, you work for the PGA Tour. You're social media. You're on top of everything. And you sent me a little snippet from the USGA and their change of way they're going to do business for the amateur and the amateur championships. We're going to cover that a little later. I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, I can't wait to get your take on that, Charlie. I'm also fired up to hear some of the great stories that you have from PGA National. Not only did your good friend, you know, Blaine McAllister win his second tour event there in 89, but you had, you know, a very special playing experience with the big three that we're going to hear all about today.
I was just a run of the mill.
Oh, come on. When you got people stacked up watching you to play a practice round, pretty big deal. I can't wait to hear about that. You know, Charlie, I played PGA National on two different occasions, junior golf. The Optimist Invitational is at PGA National, big junior event. I struggled to ever break 78 there. I mean, between the Alligator Alley 5, 6, and 7, and the bear trap, yeah, I could always find an 8 to make out there.
An 8. Snowman.
That's it. Okay, rundown for today. Number one, we'll get to some thoughts on Tiger's return at Riviera. We'll touch on that. You know, give you a little bit more detail of how John Rahm and Max Homa dueled down the stretch. Last week, Rahm is in the middle of a run that, you know, we have not seen in quite some time. We'll go over that. Number two, we'll get our good friend Tim Schmidt in here. He's the editor of USA Today's Golf Week. I'll be interested to get a feel from him on the start of the LIV golf season, you know, down in Mayakoba, and get a little update on Phil Mickelson. And number three, we'll get you dialed in with some picks and predictions for the weekend. Charlie, you know, the field at Honda, you know, it's not great, but we're coming off really four incredible weeks where the stars were playing every week. You know, we'll get him back at the Arnold Palmer next week and the players after. This is something I want to discuss with Tim as well, but what are your thoughts on where PGA National is going to fit in the schedule moving forward without Honda?
It depends if it can get a sponsor. They've got a sponsor lined up. They want to make a deal this week, but the PGA is suffering from its own success, and they got these big tournaments where the prize money is just stupid. Not stupid, but it's $20 million. I mean,
$20 million next week at Bay Hill, and $20 million purse wise, $20 million again at the Players.
How much has my good friend from Dallas made?
Scotty.
He's made over $20 million in a year.
Yep.
That's LeBron James money, you know.
He's getting there. He's got the Nike deal. You know, he's got all the necessary sponsorships and partnerships to make that happen. You know, I think touching on the Netflix, I know people are just finishing that up this week. It was amazing how they put Scottie Scheffler and Brooks Koepka in the same episode. You know, Scottie is just a well-rounded guy, very stable. Brooks, you know, on the other hand, you know, if you've watched it already, he's a 32-year-old with four major championships that doesn't feel like he can get his game back.
No place to go.
I still don't understand, Charlie.
No place to hide. But that early success, that really warped. So he thought he was going to win 20 majors. He thought, he was a major player.
Yeah.
But the good Lord doesn't shine on the same person every time. You know, he had a run that was unique. Jordan Spieth had a run that was unique. He won three majors in a period of a couple of years. That just doesn't happen, and history tells us that. So he's got to, you know, get off of that the big Taj Mahal he lives in, and go back to work. But then he gets hurt. That's a part of sport, and you know we there's always new champions being born, and there's always champions that, you know, go to the bench, and never come back.
Brooks Koepka even par through one round at LIV Mayakoba. It'll be interesting when these guys get together at the majors. You know, the majors made a decision this week. PGA of America, LIV golfers will be at the PGA Championship, so we'll see Brooks at Augusta. We'll see Brooks at LACC for the U.S. Open. We'll see him at Oak Hill for the PGA. We'll see him at Liverpool for the Open Championship. Charlie, before we move forward, how about a quick word from our friends over at Insperity?
Insperity, once again, ladies and gentlemen, at the start of a new business year, we've got so many different challenges going on. The economy is and inflation and myriad of things. But you always need a helping hand, somebody that'll help you make some important decisions. And Insperity is a company that is an HR company first. They'll help you navigate all of those governmental regulations, get your money back from COVID, so on and so forth. But they're also an ally. They're people that can help you grow your business even during trying times because they've been there. They have, such a history of growing their business. Since 1986, they went from zero to 6 billion, 4,000 employees, 4,000 experts, 4,000 people who they adore, and they treat their people kindly, and they know how to do business. So if you get in the, want some help, Insperity.com. I recommend them.
When we come back, we'll go through the Honda Classic leaderboard, give you a couple headlines around the world of golf. Defending champion Sepp Straka of the Honda Classic is trying to become the fourth player on the PGA Tour to successfully defend their title. We'll talk about that right here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour.
You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
With the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps, here's Will Doctor.
All right, 15 minutes past the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on Sports Map Radio Network and ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Insperity HR that makes a difference. Nice to have you aboard on a Saturday morning. 1-800-224-2004 is the number to get in here and discuss the latest as far as the world of golf is concerned. Charlie, Justin Suh leads the way at the Honda Classic. USC graduate, 66-64. To start the weekend, it's his best start to a PGA Tour event. Justin Suh also was the leading money winner on the Korn Ferry Tour last year. Great career in front of him. You know, the story that I'm really looking at heading into this weekend is Chris Kirk. 69-62, playing these, little flip-controlled, great tempo hold draws. Last won a PGA Tour event in 2015 at Colonial and has had to overcome quite the demons here over the last 4 years.
Yes, he's somebody that's fought alcoholism and so many people in our life and social pressures. Alcohol is one of the biggest, it's just incredible. It's fun to do it, but he got in the bad side of alcoholism. He came out of it, and now he's got his golf game back, so it's really a great story.
And, looking back a year ago at this tournament, Charlie, Chris Kirk was tied second through 36 holes and was unable to get it done, ended up finishing seventh. So, let's see if he can make up for it. I think he's due for one. He's playing great golf.
He's the most experienced on the top five.
Charlie, I was reading this week, Billy Horschel was talking about how, players are just not, playing draws anymore. Everyone's playing a cut. Everyone's starting it left. Not Chris Kirk. He's got about 10 to 15 yards on that draw. What do you think about that?
Well, that's his game. I mean, you got to go with what brung you, and that's what he cultivated for so many years when he was on tour, and that's the way he sees the golf ball going. And so to change completely is sometimes ill-advised. You got to go with something that you can trust, and you can play one side of the golf course and not the other. So he knows the ball's not going to go right. And the other guys are fighting the reverse, so that's fine with me.
Charlie, you played the Honda Classic. When you were on the PGA Tour, you had Blaine McAllister, very close friend of yours, win this golf tournament. You also played a practice round with three of the greatest golfers of all time. Can you tell us more about that?
We're all asked. Who is the foursome that you would like to have? You would you want to have your dad and your daughters, but The second most important foursome in my life was Jack Nicklaus, who I've worked for. I created a nice relationship with him and his family and also his businesses. And so I qualified for the senior PGA Championship at the Honda Golf Course, PGA National. And I played quite a few PGA club professional events there. So Jack finds out that I qualified. He said, okay, I got the game for us on Wednesday, which is the day before the tournament. So I show up, and it's Jack Nicklaus, and I'm sitting right next
to him. How did Jack ring you in those days? How did y'all communicate?
He had my cell phone.
Yeah.
But he would also a note in my locker, yeah. Handwritten. So it was a cool thing. I mean, it was neat. So I'm on the practice tee with Arnold Palmer and my good friend Gary Player. So we go to the tee, and it was really quite the scene. The three legends and Charlie Epps, and everybody's looking around, who is Charlie Epps? And a lot of the guys that were playing in the tournament, friends of mine, they always say, Charlie, how'd you get that pairing? I said, well, it's just a relationship that I have that I work for Gary Player in Spain, I played a lot of tournament, with him and Arnold. First professional I met in Argentina was Arnold Palmer, so I got that relationship as far as a PGA golf professional is concerned. But it was a great round of golf, and when we got finished, I gave them all a flag from Augusta, and they said, "What are you doing this for?" I said, "Well, I knew this was going to happen, so." Here, this is me. You know, you can sign them and give them to your own charity. And nobody ever gives them anything. Everybody's asking for them. He said, what can you do with me? Well, I just have a couple more flags I want you to sign. So it's just that great relationship I have with Jack Nicklaus. And then he's nice to include me in some of the things when we're together.
How were you able to be a competitor? You know, you had to play against these guys sometimes. But, you've cultivated relationships with, you know, over, I look at these winners week to week, you know, at least 8 to 10 of them. How were you able to compete, but also, you know, cultivate good relationships?
Well, I was never bashful. Early on, I turned professional in 1969. I mean, so over the years, I've played in a lot of events with, you know, Fuzzy Zeller and Bill Rogers and Bruce Litsky and on and on, and I had a nice relationship with Lanny Watkins through my good friend Dick Armin. So it was just my environment, and you befriend a lot of, and they're really nice people. Jay Haas, who we've had on the show many times,
Curtis Strange,
and it's the world I live in.
Unbelievable, the King, the Golden Bear, and Gary Player with Charlie Epps. Unbelievable, Charlie. Looking back at Riviera last week, John Rahm recaptured world number one from Scotty Scheffler, who, you know, only held the position for a week after his win in Phoenix. You know, as Rahm and Homa made the turn, I thought Homa, you know, had it in the bag up to last week. Homa, like Rahm, had two victories on the season. And dating back to college, you know, 32-year-old Homa has handled leads down the stretch so beautifully. So you thought when they were making the turn, you know, Homa had just as good a chance to finish it off as Rahm did.
Well, he did, but L.A. was his hometown, so he had a lot of personal pressure on him, wanting to show his relatives and his friends in L.A. He has arrived, and everybody knows that, but it just didn't go his way, and John Rahm didn't want to get beat.
Mm-mm.
And so it was a great duel coming down the stretch, and when Rahm makes that 40-foot putt for two on 14.
Yeah.
That changed the whole dynamics right there. That put so much pressure. Now
Homa
is playing from, you know, trying to catch. So it was a great duel, and John Rahm played better.
Yeah, Homa had to press on that back nine. He only hit one of his last seven fairways. It's not easy playing around the rough around Riviera, especially when you have John Rahm chasing you. And you're exactly right. California native and Homa got very emotional after the presser, and the driver simply let Homa down. But we've seen through this year, we've seen players collapse to Rahm, you know, time and time again over that West Coast swing. Elite players, I mean, world number 10, Colin Morikawa, had the lead at Kapalua, and Rahm ultimately caught him. PGA Tour rookie Davis Thompson, had the lead at Palm Springs before John Rahm caught him. And we saw it again last week with Max Homa. You know, is it Rahm's consistency or does he have an intimidating presence out there?
His idol was Seve Ballesteros. He's a Spaniard. He learned from the Spaniard, and he's not going to let anybody intimidate him. He came over to the United States to go to college in Arizona, Arizona State, and he won. He finished twice top five in professional tournaments as an amateur. Then he won the College Player of the Year back-to-back. So his pedigree in college was second to none. So he was really prepared, as we're seeing these kids that win in college. Phil Mickelson won that tournament in Tucson as a collegiate. Ben Crenshaw won his first tournament in Texas right out of college. So those guys that come out of college, Curtis Strange, Lanny Watkins, college golf, as we're seeing, is so important to get you ready for being a professional golfer.
You know, the only player that fended him off, Charlie, was Scotty Scheffler at the Waste Management. Maybe it takes a little more of a fiery Texan to fend off the Spaniard.
And a good putter.
That's right.
You know, he did. He showed him that he has grit. He's now what, six tournament victories,
mm-hmm.
and major. So, Rahm's doesn't have his major yet.
U.S. Open.
Oh, that's right. Excuse me.
At Torrey Pines, where he's won the Farmers twice. Now, Charlie, you were there to watch Johnny Miller's quick start to the season in 1975, when he nearly swept the West Coast swing. Rahm, as I said in the opener, now has the fastest start to the PGA Tour since Miller in 75. How would you compare those two players at all, if you would at all?
I would. I mean, they're both great iron players.
I asked you this question too late. Let me come back. Let's come back with that on the other side, rather than Charlie Epps Golf Hour on Sports Map Radio Network and ESPN 97.5 Houston, presented by Insperity. HR that makes a difference. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
With the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps, here's Will Doctor.
All right, 30 minutes past from the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, Sports Map Radio Network and ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Insperity, HR that makes a difference. Great to have you aboard as we break down the latest as far as the world of golf is concerned. Charlie, I cut you off there at the end, asked a question too late, but, people are seeing a level of golf that John Rahm is competing at that, as I said before we went to break, we have not seen someone take over the West Coast like that since Johnny Miller in 1975. My question was, how would you compare those two players, Charlie?
The similarity between the two players is they're both great iron players. I mean, they hit it so close, they make a lot of close birdies. And they can control the trajectory of the golf ball. Johnny Miller, the desert rat, you know, he'd play in Phoenix and then he'd go to Tucson. And he'd win by 12 to 14 shots. He just could just hit lasers into those greens. And it was with the precise distance control. You know, those two big men, they're both tall. John, of course, is probably 30, 40 pounds heavier, but the club coming into the ball is at the right angle, and it's accelerating, and their speed really allows them to hit bullets right at the pin.
They're both in the target, aren't they?
Yeah, Johnny Miller said he'd have to look left or right of the ball to see the pin because the ball is always covering it up.
Well, we now head over to the Progressive Guest Line. Welcome in Tim Schmidt. Tim is the managing editor for USA Today's Golf Week. Tim, I hope it's been a great start to the year. Thanks for taking some time to come aboard today.
Always great to talk to you guys.
Well, Tim, you're joining the conversation right as we're the golf doctor was just making a comparison to you know, to John Rahm, to Johnny Miller. Obviously, Miller had the hot start back in 75 around the West Coast. But, you know, Tim, you know, to start it off, as we look at where Rahm stands in this season, you know, what's the perfect year for John Rahm look like? Does he get to 9? Does he get to where Tiger got in 2000? Does he get to where VJ got in 2004? I know no one's catching Byron at 18, but in your opinion, Tim, what does the perfect season look like for John Rahm?
Boy, that's such a great question. You know, it's interesting. A year ago at the Charles Schwab, a bunch of us had asked him about the about his putter and how his putter wasn't performing the way that we thought it should, or at least it was the slumping part of his game. And I remember him turning to a bunch of us in the media and just saying, "Guys, you're overthinking this. My putter isn't that far off. I'm a top 30 putter in the world. If I get this thing rolling, everything else is clicking. You're just saying that because it's right now it's the weakest link in my game." You know what? John Rahm's putter is now where he needs it to be, and if it stays like that, the sky is the limit for this guy. I will say this, he feels like a guy who's just kind of taken that in for the last 2 or 3 years, taken in all that, you know, the talk of him being the next great player and coming close, but never really, you know, yes, he was number one, but he was always battling back and forth for this. It just feels like John Rahm doesn't care about what happens this year, that he's just out there with all the pieces clicking. And I think that the fact that he's not putting as much pressure and that he feels like his putter is just flowing, the sky's the limit for this guy. I really, you know, like you said, 18's out of the question, but I wouldn't be surprised if he runs a whole bunch of more wins off at this time. And I will say this, guys who are in that zone, to think about them being in the zone is the worst thing that they can do. I would love to see him get a major at some point in the next couple months. I would love to see him continue to knock off one or two big wins along the way. But more important, I just want to see the guy kind of roll in the putter the way he's been rolling it to go with all those other pieces of his game that have always been so crisp.
You know, he's one of these guys that is so strong, like Arnold Palmer was with his hands, wrists, and arms. His forearms are massive, and that to me is, you know, our philosophy at Golf Digest for teaching from Jim Flick and Bob Toski was train your hands, wrists, and arms. And mm-hmm. if you watch, you know, Johnny Miller back in the day, I really admired his speed through the hitting area, and now, you know, John Rahm, His hand, wrists, and arms through the ball is second to none on the PGA Tour, and that also helps stabilize that putter. So it's so fun to watch, and I admire him. I get a little mad. I wish I was that good, but I never was.
You know what? Yeah, it's a good point. You know what else is interesting, Charlie, where some of these other guys, the body, the pressure that they're putting on their bodies is so tremendous. He has kind of that wide, natural, curvy frame. He's got those hips. I mean, he's not doing damage to his body that other guys who are smaller and really have to torque their bodies to get, you know, to where they want to be. This is a guy who's just naturally out there hitting the ball. I mean, he really has everything rolling right now. And I think that he, with his frame and his mentality, it wouldn't surprise me if this goes on for quite a while.
Yeah, it will. I've got one question that Will pointed to me this week about what the USGA is about to launch a new program to raise money to support golf in a very good way, and it's getting people to donate money. It's kind of like a scholarship for the Curtis Cup, for the Walker Cup, and to really spread golf in a big way. It's kind of like the Olympics committee has their proving ground in Colorado. I think the USGA is onto something and getting more money into the game as far as grants are concerned. I'm really excited about that, and it's just not going to be for the rich. It's going to be for everybody. And you talk about inclusion. This is going to open the door for a lot of kids that need help and need guidance, and they'll become the golfers of the future.
You know, it's interesting because when Mike Wann took over the USGA, I think many of us were waiting for some big splash. You know, he was such a dominating presence with the LPGA and really turned that entire tour around. And I would, you know, contend that it was in better position when he was there than it is now. But I think that these are the seeds kind of finally coming through of what Mike Wann wanted to grow, this U.S. Golf Association National Development Program, some of the scholarships that he's looking to give. This is a guy who understands. I mean, look, I played with Mike a few times. He is a very wise, wise man when it comes to understanding what it's going to take for this game to grow long term. These are the kind of programs and things. It's great to look at the U.S. Open. You know, everybody wanted to first ask Mike Wann, where's the U.S. Open going for the next few years? What courses are they going to play? And his thing was, look, we need to grow the game. It's great that the U.S. Open is a staple and brings in a bunch of money for this organization, but if we don't grow the game, at some point, the whole thing bottoms out. And I think this, you're just starting to see those seeds that have been planted kind of coming to fruition. It's been a couple of years now with Mike at the USGA, and these are the type of programs, including this U.S. National Development Program, which I really think can help grow this game in the future. Now, the key is, can we maintain the momentum that we've had with the players that are at the top? You know, I mean, look at how different a field is when Tiger is still in the mix. I mean, Tiger's not going to be around forever. So can the stars of the future kind of maintain that top level to go with what he's trying to build at the grassroots level? I think that's the big question.
Tim, would you say the future of the Walker Cup and the Curtis Cup, are they in good hands? Is there any, you know, is there any anything with this USGA news where we could see the Walker Cup or Curtis Cup run into some struggles in the next couple of years, or is that why this is starting up?
I think that's why that they're doing more of this. I mean, the fact that the Ryder Cup was always something that did well, but now the President's Cup has kind of gained momentum and other pieces. I mean, look, the Spirit International, I'll give you a great example. Something that, you know, had kind of flown under the radar at times in the past is now something that becomes more prominent. These team competitions are something that bring people into the game, and I think the USGA recognizes that. So I don't have any insight on that. I haven't actually talked to anyone over there in a bit, but I would be willing to bet that this is an opportunity to grow those events rather than to take away from them.
That's Tim Schmidt. Tim, do you have time to come back with us on the other side and talk some Tiger and talk a little bit more about the start of the LIV golf season and some LPGA?
Of course.
Wonderful, wonderful. We're going to take a quick break here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. Over at the Honda Classic, Justin Suh leads the way, 66-64, currently sits at 10 under. Suh, heck of a player out of USC, won the Korn Ferry Tour money list last year. Chris Kirk, as me and Charlie talked about earlier, probably the greatest story. Well, maybe not the greatest. Chris Kirk, great story. Last one in 2015 at Colonial. He started 69-62. Ryan Gerard, who is in a tie for third, is the story of the week. Monday qualifier, Charlie, we have not seen this since 85, Kenny Knox. Ryan Gerard, a Monday qualifier, who is within two of the lead. When we come back, more from Tim Schmidt, managing editor of Golf Week, right here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, presented by Insperity, HR that makes a difference. Back after this.
You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
With the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps, here's Will Doctor.
And we return with USA Today Golf Week's managing editor, Tim Schmidt. Tim, I know, you know, the average sports fan is looking at this Honda Classic field and wondering, you know, what is going on. And no one should be surprised because the tour just came off an incredible West Coast swing where, you know, we saw the best players in the world play for, you know, 2 to 4 weeks. And, you know, I can't wait to get your thoughts on you know, some other topics in the game, you know, today. But I'm fine this week with a little change of pace and getting behind the field good stories and Chris Kirk and Monday qualifier Ryan Gerard and two-time major champion Zach Johnson is only 5 shots back heading into the weekend. I love Justin Suh, you know, led the Korn Ferry Tour last year, but not every fan sees it the way we do. Do you think that the famous PGA National has a future on the PGA Tour schedule beyond this year without Honda, who, you know, will not be renewing their title sponsorship after 42 years?
Boy, that's a tough question. I mean, it's such a historic place and area for golf. Obviously, you know, it's just a region down in South Florida where you would expect them to have numerous tournaments. I don't know. And to be frank, I where the schedule is going, I have no idea overall. I mean, I know, Will, you and I have tweeted at each other a little bit. I know you're excited about the fact that the Houston Open is taking or could take a more prominent place in the schedule.
Oh, I'm fired up, Tim. I'm fired up.
On the other end, here I am in Austin, and we're going to lose the Dell match play, which I think is insane. So I don't really know where this goes in the future. By the way, congratulations. And I love going down to Memorial Park. It's a great tournament. But, yeah, I mean, I think this what happened with LIV Golf just over a year ago, and we've had these discussions about what could happen with the game. It's still in flux. I mean, where this thing shakes out in terms of your secondary tournaments, this is really going to change in the future. And because we have such strong fields, and I love this. I mean, I could tell you our activity on golfweek.com for the first few months this year is, you know, higher than ever because of the elevated events. But what is that going to mean come October and November when some of these things drop off? And what's it going to mean on weeks like this when, yes, you and I appreciate it. I love seeing Dylan Fratelli, who lives here in Austin, you know, in the top 20 and making some noise yesterday with a 65. But does your average fan have enough, fandom for the game that they're going to follow on these weeks? Boy, that's sure still to be determined, isn't it?
You know, I agree with you, Tim. And, you know, on the other side, we were extremely spoiled, you know, with the last 5 weeks from the PGA Tour. You know, we talked about Rahm last segment. You know, Homa, has won twice this year, won at Torrey Pines. Justin Rose turned the clock back at 42 at Pebble Beach in a field that wasn't the best. You know, Pebble gets a little heat for their field right now as well. And then Scheffler in Phoenix, you know, Tim, the viewership Riviera was obviously a big bragging point, and Tiger played a huge role in that. 3.4 million watching last Sunday. Tiger's Thursday round with JT and Rory was among the top 10 cable shows among the, you know, the younger age demo. You have to feel like the game is coming off these last 5 weeks. This is got to be a dream start for the tour.
You know, you bring up Scheffler. That's a perfect example. Let's go back to the Houston Open. He finishes tied for ninth at the Houston Open. He finishes second at the Hero. He went T7 at the Century, which is a difficult one. And then, you know, after the American Express, a good showing with the top 11, but then wins the Phoenix Open. He's tied for 12th last week at Genesis. That's the kind of start that you'd be, you know, usually you'd be talking about, wow, this guy is on fire right now. Instead, with Homa and Rahm, he's not even really in the conversation right now, because there are so many good players playing in those specific events together. The fields are so good. It really has changed how important each of those are, which is great. That was the whole intent of this. That's what, you know, don't get me wrong. Jay Monahan was basically, his feet were held to the fire, and they said, look, if Liv's going to do this, we need to do something similar. But the other side of that is the Honda Classics. It's these events that just, you know, it's going to be difficult for them to get top 20 players in. And I hope, I sit here on Thursday and Friday mornings with three televisions in my office here in Round Rock, and I've got ESPN Plus on each one with different featured groups and everything. And I'm that guy, like you, who's going to want to dig into those stories. But is your average fan going to do the same thing to see Chris Kirk, as great a story as he is, or to see others in this field? Boy, I hope so. I'm just not sure they will.
I think everything that's being done in the last 10 years, starting with, you know, including everybody, building the game for a lot of people that really are enjoying the game today, and this move with the USGA expanding their footprint with the professional golf, and not professional golf, but their main tournaments. But I think everything's being done the right way. I mean, it's just like baseball. You know, who would they put on Saturday afternoon? The Yankees. Everybody wanted to see the Yankees. Everybody wants to see the best players, just like the Super Bowl. Who did we want in the Super Bowl? Kansas City, because of Mahomes. I mean, so today, not getting all the best players together and getting those exhibitions, but their competition, I think it's really great. Sure, there's some of the tournaments are going to go the other direction, but I think golf is just going to go, especially professional golf, go further, you know, to improve the scenery. And golf in general, people enjoy watching it, and they'll go to the TVs, they'll stream. We're a bunch of nuts, just golf guys.
And you bring up a great point, Charlie. There is more to consume than ever. On a day like today, when I'm watching my three screens, I also know that LIV Golf comes on this afternoon. I can put that up. There are more major amateur tournaments that we're paying attention to than ever before. So I agree, there's more to consume than ever, and LIV Golf is a huge part of that right now. The fact that they're going to have more tournaments, and the field in Mayakoba is probably overall better than the field right now at the Honda Classic. So there are going to be weeks like that. There is more golf everywhere. I just hope that the average fan comes to it as often. But I agree with you. For us freaks who just love it nonstop, boy, it's a great time to be a golf fan, isn't it?
Yes, it sure is.
You know, Tim, I read and, you know, I hear, you know, a lot that season one of LIV Golf was a success. I'm curious about how you measured that. And then the other thing, I don't mean to ask you two questions in one, but why switch from an accessible platform in YouTube to the CW that's coming in last on ratings every week?
That's such a great question. We were internally, we have a Golf Week chat with about 12 or 15 of us who yesterday, as we had LIV on one of our screens, and we're all scattered around the country, one of the guys popped in and said, there are more shows being promoed on this broadcast that I've never heard of in my life than anything that's ever made me feel old before, because that is just such an odd place for a LIV Golf to be in amongst these, you know, CW supernatural and teen-based shows that are on that network. I'm not sure. And I guess it was just a really desperate move because they knew that they wanted to be on over-the-air television where they feel like
golf shops and locker rooms, you got to have cable.
Yeah, and but it's interesting. I feel like what they're trying to do is, and this isn't a surprise to anyone, is kind of all over the place, right? I mean, we've seen their leadership come and go already.
Yeah.
We've seen money be thrown around at different times in spending waves and then scaled back at times. It still doesn't feel like they understand what they're trying to do. Like the whole idea of golf and, you know, louder, don't blink, was to bring in young fans into their game. Well, young fans don't watch over-the-air television. Young fans stream stuff on their phone. My 9-year-old daughter's on the couch right now streaming YouTube videos.
Yeah.
She's not watching what's on the CW. So, yeah, I just feel like they don't know, and they're kind of throwing things at the wall and hoping something will stick. I will say I the fact that they're up to 14 tournaments and the fact that the fields are a little more, you know, I feel like this week is a perfect example. They did go opposite a vulnerable PGA Tour week. I'll be watching today. I don't think I'll watch exclusively, but I'll definitely have it on. So I do think that in that regard, they figured it out. But I'm with you. I don't think that the television platform makes any sense. I don't think, you know, you say success. I mean, we're looking at different things. You know, if nobody listens to your radio show or comes to my website, somebody eventually says, we got to stop doing this.
Right.
But when you've got hundreds of millions of dollars behind you to just throw around, the measure of success is very different. So there is a stir. There is a buzz. I guess if that's what they're looking for, it could be considered successful. I just also wonder at what time the pot of money, somebody finally says, hey, it's going dry here, and I don't think we've seen enough in return.
Tim, I appreciate your insights so much today. We're out of time, but we look forward to talking with you again soon. We'll talk soon, Tim.
Always good to talk to you guys.
Have a good one. All right, this is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. We're out of time today. We'll see you next week as the PGA Tour moves to Arnold Palmer Invitational, and after that, the Players Championship. Thanks again so much for listening. Thanks, Charlie. Thanks, John.